My name is Pinar Sinopoulos Lloyd, and I and my spouse, we co-founded Queer Nature. Queer Nature came to be actually because So and I, we both were studying ancestral skills, which is another word for survival skills, but feels more respectful in a way. And we were learning ancestral skills in our young adult lives and realized that there wasn't really a space to bring kind of our non-binary and queer selves and queer ways of seeing the world in the ancestral skills world and the nature connection world. And so we ended up wanting to build a space or create a space for the LGBTQIA community to come and be their full selves and be in a place that's culturally accessible to learn ancestral skills and to like reskill ourselves to empower ourselves as a community.
So there's a lot in there. There's a real lot of stuff, and I'd love to start unpacking some of it. There's the ancestral skills aspect and the connection to nature. There's also the LGBTQIA, and maybe you could explain some of that. And there's also respectful ways of coming to these ancestral skills, learning and utilizing them. So maybe let's expand a little on that.
Yeah, so first of all, I want to name that the word queer doesn't work for everyone and can, you know, has come from a place where it was used offensively. And it's kind of a step to like reclaiming it and you know, just an empowering way to just step into queerness that also is an umbrella term for LGBTQIA, which, you know, is a mouthful. But LGBTQIA stands for lesbian, bi, gay, trans, queer, intersex, asexual, and then there's usually a plus sign at the end because there's a lot of other identities that aren't enfolded into that, such as like non-binary people or two-spirit people. And yeah, so that's a little bit about what LGBTQIA stands for and how queer sometimes doesn't work for some people, and I want to name that because it's in our name.
I know sometimes in my experience with you and the work you're doing, you're up against different biases, whether it's biases against people of color, against LGBTQIA people. How do you navigate this world of wilderness experience, of rites of passage, of ancestral skills, coming from the multiplicity of identities and knowledge and ancestry that you carry?
When I was learning or reskilling myself, when I started reskilling myself about 6-7 years ago, I was really involved with like Indigenous solidarity work, in particular with Black Mesa. And I realized that there were so many stories in the land, like a lot of trauma, ancestral trauma, and like severance. And to me, that has to be named in connection to nature. If we're connecting to the natural world, that seems like a really integral part if we're listening to the stories of the land through tracking or bird watching, to really understand like the who lived here, whose land it is still, and really honoring the, you know, the many years of the stewardship that happened and continues to happen with the native peoples of this land. So to me, that's been a really key part of queer nature coming together, and it has fruited from my own ancestries, which my matrilineage is from the Andes, so Wonka people, and as well as Chinese from Peruvian slavery. And then my patrilineage is Turkish, which is actually where I grew up. I grew up in Turkey. And as I was doing more research, especially about my matrilineage, about the way that our people were uprooted from our earth-based cultures, and in particular, like the queer culture that, or the third gender culture that exists and it has existed for a very long time, it has inspired queer nature essentially to, or my way of being in queer nature to really amplify those voices of indigeneity and the intersection of that and decolonizing nature connection.
Not all the listeners might be familiar with the concept of Two-Spirit or in the Andes of Kwariwarmi. So could you tell people about that?
Two-Spirit is a term that was agreed upon at a gay and lesbian gathering of Native North American Native folks in Winnipeg, I think in 1990. And it essentially was a term to really encompass the complexity of LGBTQ people in the First Nations people of the United States, or quote-unquote so-called United States. And an aspect of it is really naming that lesbian and gay didn't really fit the cultural aspects of their like sexual orientation or their gender. And it amplifies really the earth-based way of being in the world as like an LGBTQ First Nations person. And then Kwariwarmi, it comes from my lineage, my Andean lineage. And Kwariwarmi is similar. It's like the sibling of Two-Spirit, because Two-Spirit really, I want to name, came from North America. And although borders really are a colonial construction of like bordering or separating North America from South America, the Andes, the Wonka and the Incan folk, they have a third gender called the Kwariwarmi. And the Kwariwarmi, interestingly enough, as I've been doing this research starting about a year ago, I ran into this book called Decolonizing the Sodomite. And I've learned a lot about like the third gender people in the Incan civilization and in the Andes. And essentially the story, the mythology or the story goes that Kwariwarmi people really showed up in Incan cosmology after there was like a cataclysmic change in the Incan society. And the Kwariwarmi held a very particular role kind of with their ability to navigate the liminal spaces and of like death and birth and like of feminine and masculine and like just kind of this in-between medicine that they hold. The Kwariwarmi, they were and are like the ceremonialists who held the story of the culture of the Incan civilization. And in the Incan and Andean cosmology, the creative force of the universe was androgynous or is androgynous. So the in-between space was really highly regarded upon. That essentially gave the balance between like the feminine and the masculine. And so the androgynous energy is very sacred in my Andean traditions. And unfortunately, through colonization, it's been really wiped out in a lot of ways. Not completely, obviously, we still exist, but Spaniards, when they came to and encountered the Incan people, it was very much like one of the first things that they tried to do was to abolish or get rid of the Kwariwarmi third gender people. And that really undermined the Incan cosmology, because the Kwariwarmi people were the people through ceremony held the Incan cosmology and like storyline of the culture. And since the Incan civilization was not a written language as like Western colonization sees it, it actually wiped out a lot of knowledge. And the Kwariwarmi people actually went under and ended up hiding essentially. And then women started to like really take their roles to really try to save that ceremonial kind of role.
Thank you. There's so much there. Getting back to the nature work that you do with queer nature and the reconnecting with nature, these are open to people of any age or gender background. Is that right?
Yes. Queer nature was originally formed for queer youth, and it was actually the Women's Wilderness Institute that came up. One of my friends, Emily Isaacs, who's the director, she came up to me and So at a climbing gym, and she was just like, we really want to like work with you all to do a queer youth programming, let's do this, essentially. And that didn't really kick off with the queer youth, and we got a lot of feedback that there was a lot of interest for LGBTQIA adults. And so a lot of our Skillshares now, which are the our main like classes and workshops that we offer on like ancestral skills, they're open to LGBTQIA people 16 and up. And we encourage anybody who identifies in the LGBTQIA community or are questioning to come and join us and, you know, reskill ourselves in like a container where we really hold queer and transness as like an integral aspect of like earth-based culture.
What are some of the skills that are part of ancestral skills?
Some of the stuff that we teach is friction fire. We teach wildlife tracking, and wildlife tracking is a way of reading the landscape through like clear print ID, signs. There's just, yeah, a lot to wildlife tracking. That's kind of an area of specialty of ours. And we also teach in collaboration with other people, like queer folks. We teach herbalism. We have taught or are going to teach an intro to botany. And I've taught pine needle basket making with ponderosa pine. And so, yeah, there's a lot to ancestral skills. And one of the things that we really believe, too, is that counsel is an ancestral skill. And so is remediation of conflict remediation, and grief work is an ancestral skill. And so we widen the way ancestral skills are really held. And it's essentially what we see ancestral skills are as endangered ways of being in our culture now. And that our ancestors were especially earth-based. Our earth-based ancestors really needed for their survival and their thrival in this world.
You know, all cultures at one point were earth-based. They had to be, but different peoples lost that connection at different points along the way. Some people, like in Europe, might have been centuries and centuries and centuries or millennia before other people. So what are some of the activities involved in a gathering to reconnect and to learn some of these ancestral skills? Like, what does it look like?
And I do want to name that, you know, you brought up something really important, which is that a lot of people have been impacted by colonization, including European lineage people, which obviously goes back farther. The track is really an old track that is really imprinted on our souls. And the colonization of the Americas is far more recent. And I think it's really important to name that we are on indigenous land. And even as we are, like, coming from European lineage and have our own severances, to really name that living in the Americas and occupying indigenous territories is still a really integral part of walking in integrity, and also doing our own ancestral recovery work as European settler folks. And yeah, and some of the ways that as you were asking about queer nature, some of the ways that we show up and like the way that we teach things, like for instance, we recently had a wildlife tracking course up here in Netherlands. And with every Skillshare that we teach, we introduce the indigenous peoples of this land and a little bit of the history, because it's so recent here in Boulder and the Boulder area. It's 158 years recent of the contact of the settlers or the colonial or colonizers to the Arapaho, Ute, and Cheyenne. And I think that's really a pivotal part of, that's like the first thing that we bring up, just to really like presence the trauma of the land and the way that we can walk together as like a queer community to heal the land, essentially. And I think queer people in particular have a really particular role in that. And I think it's a community process to figure out what that is. But coming from my Kwari Warmi lineage, it feels like a really integral part to the cultural healing. And so after naming the story, the indigenous stories of the land, or a story or a couple of stories, not all of them, of course, we begin with a check-in of like people's names and their pronouns and, you know, what brings them here. And then we go really delving into the skill and like really learning the skills and relearning, really, like really reclaiming these skills that are endangered and that every one of us really carried and carries ancestrally in like our bones. And so yeah, that's been like a really integral part to the queer nature Skillshares, is we're all carriers of ancestral wisdom and our ancestors walk with us, even as queer people who sometimes sever ourselves from our ancestors or our immediate family because of the, you know, the severance that happened or may happen it when coming out as a queer or trans person.
Another aspect of the work that you've been involved in is rites of passage, working with youth. Can you talk a little bit about what some of that looks like?
So rites of passage work is something that I'm really passionate about. I essentially, one of the ways that I come into the work is I believe through like the support of other people like Bill Plotkin and several other mentors of mine, believe that we are in like, our culture is a very adolescent culture, and I think colonial culture in particular is really stuck in a wounded adolescent place of just like taking and taking and like not giving back to the land and just creating traumas after traumas and really perpetuating the erasure of nature-based ways of living and indigenous people, as well as even like our ecological kin in the ecocidal culture that colonization perpetuates. So rites of passage work to me essentially is like really wanting to address that we're kind of stuck in a dominant culture that's really harmful and like maybe inadvertently harmful and in an adolescent place of taking, and really creating the space for people, in individual people in that culture, to be initiated into something bigger than that, which hopefully is like an ecological sense of self and a responsibility that comes with like wanting to walk as an honorable ancestor in the world and really being connected to the future ones as well as the ancestral beings who walk through us and with us and showing up for our for the ecosystems that we live in and stand up for them. So rites of passage to me are really rooted in activism and like in very unique ways of activism. That's the thing is like we think about frontline activists when we think about activism and like pickets and different kinds of frontline activism. And to me, partly inspired by Joanna Macy's work, I see that another integral aspect of activism is like creating regenerative cultures. And to me, initiated adults or initiated people bring about regenerative cultures. And also there are aspects where we're taking down the dominant culture at place. No question about that. They both really have to exist and inform each other. So to me, rites of passage work is integral to people really stepping into their ecological and ancestral responsibilities as being humans on this planet.
That is so beautiful and so profound, because often when I hear the term rites of passage, I think of something that happens around adolescence that is helping someone become an adult. But really, this is so much broader, because all of us under colonization have been separated from nature, have been separated from our own connections to all beings. And we all need that as a way of healing from colonialism, from the dominant culture, which is literally killing the ecosystems that we are a part of.
Yeah, absolutely. And I also forgot to name that in particular, I've been really focusing on rites of passage with the LGBTQIA community. And that's been a lot more of my focus in the past 5 or 6 years of just really envisioning what does rites of passage look like for queer and trans people. To me, as a person who's been participants in rites of passage, kind of like wilderness solos and whatnot, the first few that I've participated on, I didn't really feel like my queerness was seen or integrated into that experience. And it was more like, oh, that's like, you know, that's not actually important here in this initiation. And that to me was really harmful, especially because coming from a Kwari Warmi lineage and like now doing this research, I saw how integral that aspect of me is to the way that I walk in the world and my gifts in the world is really bound up in like my gender nonconformity and my non-binary ways of thinking. And so me and So, we've both been very curious about how rites of passage can look like for the trans and queer community. And we ended up in the process of really grappling with how that looks. One of my mentors actually told me about the Queer Quest, which is something that the School of Lost Borders offers. And it is like an LGBTQIA, like a vision fast space. This was like 3 years ago or 4 years ago when I found that out. And I was like, wow, some people are already doing it. That's really great. And let me like connect with them. And so now Ruth and Pedro, who are the people who started the Queer Quest, they live 50 feet from me as we're sitting right now. And they've become really incredible friends and mentors. And I think, you know, with Ruth and Pedro, they've been very much as I participated in the Queer Quest and really started to actually experience being in queer ceremony. It really impacted me on like a somatic level of being like, wow, I can bring my full self here. And like, I feel like the people that I'm in circle with and counsel, the other 13 people, they also carry a very unique gift that's really informed by their gender and their sexuality, not as like a new narrative. That's the thing that I also want to bring up. Like a lot of people think queer and trans is kind of like a new phenomena in like the culture. And as I kind of alluded to earlier with my Kwari Warmi lineage, we as queer and trans people, essentially queer and transness is like an ecological formation. And it is, we've existed for millennia. And if you look at gender variant people in different cultures, we're spread like around the, if you look at a map, like we're peppered across like the earth. So it's not just one culture, or like it's not a new phenomena. And the narrative that it is kind of like a new way of being in the world can be really harmful and erases a lot of indigenous knowledge and our own kind of ancestral ways of being. So to me, queer rites of passages are so integral to the work of really showing up as stewards of the earth and guardians of the earth that are uniquely informed by the way that we walk in the world. And, you know, and I feel like a lot of queer and trans people don't want to come to like ceremonies and initiations or rites of passage things because they know that they're going to be misgendered, or, you know, that their pronouns are not going to be honored, or their full selves won't be seen. You know, their souls essentially won't be recognized in their full selves. And so and I are very devoted to bringing about culturally accessible rites of passage work for the queer and trans community.
How can people find out more about Queer Nature? And are there any events coming up this spring or summer that people might be able to participate in?
Yeah, so Queer Nature, we have a Facebook page. You can just search Queer Nature and you'll find us. And we also have an Instagram account, which we love to post on. So you can find us at Queer Nature again. And we also have a website, queernature.org, as well as you can email us at queernature.info@gmail.com. Or any of those other methods that I said, like you can always just like message us through Facebook and whatnot. And as far as events that are coming up, we just had an intro to herbalism just like actually on Earth Day, which was so awesome to be in a queer community on Earth Day and, you know, talk about a lot of the potency of studying herbalism and like how herbalism has been culturally appropriative in some ways and like has taken from indigenous ways into traditional indigenous knowledge, and also like reskilling ourselves in herbal kind of medicine and plant medicine. And as far as like future ones, we do have an intro to botany coming up on July 1st, and it's going to be like a day hike, and we're going to be ending it like kind of like towards dusk. So it's going to be a really beautiful time on July 1st. And we have space in that still, which is really exciting. And then we also have another one that's actually coming up in a couple weeks in May. That's equine connection, so like connecting to horses, and then also self-defense. So that will be really interesting as well. And we have a wait list for that. However, you can still like, you can email us and if you're interested in that and if you want to be on the wait list. And what's most exciting is I told you about the Queer Quest from the School of Lost Borders. And last year, Ruth and Pedro asked if we wanted to, me and So wanted to co-guide and like initiate the first queer youth quest. And so that's actually happening this June, June 14th until June 23rd in Buena Vista, Colorado, which is so exciting. It's going to be for youth 16 to 19 years old who are on the LGBTQIA kind of spectrum or however they identify in that realm. And my sibling's actually coming from Puerto Rico, which I'm so excited about. And so, yeah, this is going to be an incredible ceremony with queer youth. And what's going to be really beautiful about it, too, is it's going to be followed right after the adult queer quest. And so there's going to be a day of overlap where the queer adults will actually welcome in the queer youth. And so we really want to, like, create like intergenerational bridges of like which rites of passages are like rooted in, and of really, you know, the queer adults welcoming in the queer youth into their own initiation after they've had their own the week before, or like a couple days actually beforehand. So we have a sliding scale for the queer youth quest for D, and there's scholarships available, partial or full. So please contact us about that if that interests you, or you know anyone who might be interested in that.
Well, Pinar, thank you so much. This has been really interesting, and we look forward to hearing more about Queer Nature.
Thank you so much. I am so grateful for this opportunity, and I just am so grateful that you requested this time together.